Order to Tuesday, June 21st, 2016, regular board meeting. Madam Treasurer, may I have on with item number three, approval of the minutes from May 17th, 2016 board meeting. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Whitman?
Here.
Mr. Pagany?
Here. I'd like to move to item 1.03, the Pledge of Allegiance. Any discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, will you call the roll, please?
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Truex? Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero? Mr. Pagany?
Aye. Item 4.01, approval of the June 24th, 2016 Board of Education agenda. Madam Superintendent, do we have any changes to the agenda this evening?
President Pagany, there are no changes to the agenda tonight.
And with that, item 2.01, a move to executive session. Do I have a motion? Second by Mr. Whitman.
So moved.
Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Second.
Mr. Truex?
Moved by Ms. Dunlap, second by
Mr.
Truex.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Pagany?
Mrs.
Dunlap?
Item 5.01, the fun part of the evening, recognition of our, well, pretty darn good track team. We'll go ahead and have our representative come on down from executive session. There will be no action, but we will begin our regularly scheduled board program as soon as we get back. Thank you.
Good evening. Mrs. Manning, board members. First, I'd like to thank everyone for being here. I'd like to thank my family personally. Track season starts in early March, and every weekend is taken. So I'd like to thank them for being here. I'd like to thank you guys, like I did last year. You might not know it, but being a spring sport, the pay-to-play or pay-to-participate actually does. You'd be surprised how many conversations I have with track coaches and spring coaches about the pay-to-participate fee. You've kept it down or kept it at the same, and our numbers have increased for each year that you've done that. So indirectly, thank you. I'd like to thank my coaches, best sprint coach in the state of Ohio, Darian Noble, come on up, and Madeline Schultz, my right hand. I'd like to start tonight with our girls team. Girls team was district runner-up, fifth place at the regional, and a couple weeks ago on a Friday and Saturday, they scored 13 points, and we got 14th place at the state meet. Already receiving their certificates for academic All-Ohio, which means these two young ladies had to have at least a 3.5 or above. I believe they both had 3.9s, and they received their certificates from the Ohio High School Athletic Association, were Micah Cox and Hannah Gaskins. But first, I'd like to start with our fifth place finisher in the 100 hurdles. It was particularly pleasing, Gloria Opoku, come on down. It was pretty amazing because Gloria missed all of last season with a severe knee injury. She missed all of last season, missed all of the indoor season, and was able to come in fifth place in the 100 hurdles. Gloria will be attending Malone University on a track scholarship. Next, we have a junior, Micah Cox. Micah was sixth place to the 200 meters at the state meet. Also, another athletic shout out to the board because Micah is a open enrollee from Licking Heights. So thanks for that open enrollment policy. And our 4x400 meter relay team, again, Micah Cox, junior Tyler Mixon, junior Hannah Gaskin, who cannot be here, she's out of state on vacation, and freshman Nia Grant. These ladies finished third at the state meet in the 4x400 meter relay. You guys have to come down. So as a few of you board members were here last year, fortunately, I got to be here. Fortunately, we've been here all 4 years that I've been the head coach. We were third last year. This year, we were district champs. These are the boys now, I'm sorry. We were district champs. We were regional runner-up. And this year at the state meet, we scored 31 points. Last year we scored 24. We scored 31 this year, and we were state runner-up. The only other time this was accomplished was in 2004, when our track team scored 30 points at the state meet. So since we scored 31, not that we're counting or anything, but the guys say that we are officially, at least on paper, the best track and field team that Reynoldsburg High School has ever had. So I'd like to start first with a state champion, and that would be Mark Gooden. Unfortunately, or fortunately, Mark cannot be here. Mark is actually already at Northwestern University. Mark is attending Northwestern on a football scholarship, and he's already there getting started with his classes. But we do have the genetic gene pool here. So I think Dad is coming up to accept his All-Ohio. Mark also had a 3.5 or above and received All-Ohio Academic Ohio status by the Ohio High School Athletic Association. Mark was always being one for the dramatics. He had the lead going into the finals of the discus throw, and sure enough, another kid from Canfield, Ohio, moved ahead of him, and then on Mark's second-to-last throw, not only did he win the gold medal, but he also broke our school record, which now stands at 189 feet, 3 inches. Yeah. With his flair for dramatics, Mark actually won the state meet by 1 inch. Mark was an OCC champ, district champ, regional champ, and of course, state champion. Next, we have Danzel Moore, senior. Danzel was a state runner-up in the 100 meters. Danzel also came within 3/100ths of a second of breaking our school record. He ran a 10.75 this year, and our school record is a 10.72. Danzel Moore. Next is junior Travis Marks. Travis was sixth place at the state meet in the 200 meters. He was also an OCC champ, district champ, regional champ, and fifth place, as I mentioned, in the 200 meters at the state meet. I forgot also to mention that Danzel was an OCC champ, district champ, regional champion, and then, of course, state runner-up in the 100 meters. Danzel and Travis, if you want to come up again. Now we have junior Sterling Smith and senior Johnny Carter. The four of them represent our district champion 4x100-meter relay, district champion 4x200-meter relay, regional champion 4x100-meter relay, regional runner-up 4x200-meter relay, state meet fourth place 4x100-meter relay, state meet fifth place 4x200-meter relay. They have new school records in the 4x1, and which 41.78, and a new school record in the 4x2, 126.90. If you know anything about track and field, those are pretty blazing times. So if you're keeping score for this boys' team, they have four school records, nearly a fifth record. Had Danzel run 3/100ths of a second faster, they'd have five school records. We only compete in 16 events in the state in any track meet, and they nearly had five school records, so it's about a third. So with that said, probably the best boys track and field team we've had here at Reynoldsburg High School. Thank you. And last year I was asked who we have returning. Most of the team comes back for next year, so hopefully, knock on wood.
Thank you all very much for that. That's always a highlight of any board meeting when we start to recognize some of those great achievements from everybody, so thank you. Moving on to items from the board. Date change for the July 2016 Board of Education meeting. Madam Superintendent, would you like to go over those new dates with us, please?
Sure. President Begney, members of the board, I am making a recommendation that we change the July board meeting and move it up a week, primarily due to the possibility of some revisions in our dress code policy that you are going to hear tonight and possibly act on. We want to give families the a generous amount of time, adequate amount of time to make plans and buy clothes and make purchases for school. So moving it up a week will give us at least another week to prepare and get the word out as we start school August 10th this year, a little earlier. So I'm requesting that basically under for those reasons.
Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Truex, seconded by Ms. Dunlap. Any discussion? No discussion. We'll go ahead and Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion passed. Item 6.02, board members may speak at different issues on this time. Mr. Whitman, we will start with you tonight.
Okay. Well, gosh, they all just left, but of course, you know, I think we thoroughly congratulated the track team. But hearing about all the records that were broken reminds me of, you know, the wall of track records under the stadium, you know, near the concession stands. So I'll be, you know, glad to see some additions on there. But it occurs to me that as I've been visiting other schools for things like, you know, robotics competitions or band things, that I'm always really happy to see signs of those schools' history up on the walls, maybe, you know, graduating classes going all the way back for a few decades, or the high school musical posters going back to 1962, or winning track teams or other accomplishments recognized, and we have some of that in our district here, you know, in places like under the stadium and in the central office and various other places, but I think it would be really great if we had some more of that, you know, in some of the bare walls in the high schools and things. So, anyway, something I'd like to see, but who knows? Yeah.
Thank you, Mrs. Dunlap.
Let's see if I get this right. Again, I wanted to say congratulations to the track team, but they did leave, and it's kind of neat. I've known Mark since Cub Scouts, and I just always think of him as a scrawny little boy, and it's so hard to picture him now because he's not scrawny and he's not little. I hope everyone is enjoying the summer. I know there's actually a food truck fest tonight, and I'm disappointed I can't be there, but hopefully everybody will get out of here early enough and they can go take advantage of some of the good food. I wanted to say another congratulations also. I wanted to say congratulations to Sarah Hartman. She was named the American Legion Buckeye Girls State Samsung Scholarship finalist. Each state designates one girl and one boy to compete for this scholarship, and up to 10 of the 100 finalists nationwide will be awarded a $20,000 scholarship. The remaining finalists receive small scholarships. Samsung gives these awards to direct descendants of wartime American veterans to honor the sacrifice our soldiers made to keep South Korea free. And I understand her grandfather served during the Korean War, so I wanted to congratulate Sarah and recognize her. And I think that's about it for me.
Mrs. Tenero.
I don't have anything.
Mr. Truex.
Thank you all for coming out tonight. The first thing that I'd like to mention is go see our new stadium. Yeah. It looks great. Just stop by and see it. The other thing, we are going to have some paving over the summer, so watch out where that's going to be occurring over at Livingston and other locations. We also have some new flooring going in over the summer, so the kids will have new, better entryways come this fall. So thanks again for coming out, and remember to stay hydrated. Thanks.
Thank you. Again, thank you all for coming. Is this on again, or did I turn it off?
There we go. Is that better?
Yes. Oh,
okay. No, my light's not working. Just wanted to provide everybody with kind of an update on the 2017-2018 enrollment issue. As you know, we had our own dealings earlier this year, and just want to let everybody know what the process is as we move forward. I spoke with the superintendent, and we're looking to kind of set a series of meetings up with some of the administrators not too long after school starts. And again, it starts very early this year, so we're going to give them time to get settled in. But what we're going to try and do is make it in a multi-phase approach. We're going to look to figuring out, you know, what our plan is. What kind of district do we want to be? Do we want to be a district that is where it's primarily a first choice district, where every student will get the opportunity to pick and choose which academy that they would like to go to? Or the other option, which is something else, whether that's, you know, something to do with the academies in general, or whether it's something specific about moving to a merit-based or lottery-based system due to enrollment, all of those other different types of things. Once we answer that question, then we'll be able to move forward from there. Obviously, there's a lot going into it. We're looking at going down the enrollment all the way down really until the fourth grade level to kind of figure out and start gaming some numbers. Superintendent Thomas Manning was good enough to remind me that this year's senior class is a little bit larger than the previous senior year class, so hopefully that'll open up some space on its own. But just wanted to make sure everybody was aware that those are things we are talking about, and we will have some kind of plan set up as we kind of get moving along here, but we want to make sure that we do this right so there aren't any issues as we move forward. Again, school starts in, it feels like next week, but I know it's a little bit longer than that, but it'll be here before you know it, and we'll talk more about the dress code in a little while. Beyond that, those are the big things. We've got some other things coming up. A student came up to me that's in Reynoldsburg City Schools. He is an Eagle Scout, or soon to be Eagle Scout, and is looking to move a project where it's something called Buddy Benches. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the concept of Buddy Benches. If he hasn't contacted you, I know he's going through Buildings and Grounds first, but eventually, you elementary school administrators out there, he will be talking to you soon, so it's a great idea. The idea is, it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's basically a bench within the, you know, the playground area, and someone who needs a buddy can sit there, and then somebody sees it, and there you go. Then they can have somebody to play with, and in this day and age, we can use all the friends we can get. Beyond that, thanks for coming out tonight, and now we will go ahead and move on to item 7.01. Superintendent Thomas Manning, do you have any comments for the evening?
President Begney and members of the Board of Education, just wanted to go back a couple weeks ago, rewind to graduation. We had another successful year. We had 422 graduates, 36 valedictorians. Our students earned over 2,000 college credits before graduating high school, which is wonderful. Approximately 60% of our students graduated having taken at least one college course, and we're striving for 100%. And our kids earned or were awarded over $10 million in scholarships, and that is just phenomenal. I am super proud of our students and very proud of the staff and administration. Put on a very phenomenal, very awesome and top shelf graduation ceremony, so thank you for that. We had a great end to the school year, wrapped up relatively uneventful, which is always nice for administrators. We did, the very next week, engage in our PD for teachers and leaders, and that was very successful. Got a lot of learning in ahead of time. Summer school is underway for elementary through high school, and we are actually approaching the end of that already. And just wanted to remind you guys about our Summer Feeds project. Students in the community can report to Livingston High School for a free meal, which is nice. And summer is kind of a fast paced in time, and we don't always make healthy options. So if you have a student at home and you want to make sure they get something healthy once a day, send them to Livingston for lunch. I think Mr. Truex talked about the projects, but lots of good things. Summer projects to improve our school buildings and facilities are underway this summer. Be careful. Wear a hard hat or stay out of the area. Thank you.
All right. Item 8.01, visitors. Did I turn it off again?
No, okay. It's on now.
Okay, visitors can't approach. There are no listed visitors, but we do have at least one speaker slip. Madam Treasurer, do we have any others, or is it just the only one?
Just the one.
This one? All right. Jim Rodemeyer, feel free to come on down. The floor is yours. Want to remind you to...
I know.
You're a frequent customer. I just want to make sure.
My name is Jim Rodemeyer. I live at 1020 Ruskin Drive, right here in Reynoldsburg, have since about 1971. Good evening, members of the board and administration. I'm here tonight to speak about two issues. One is paraprofessionals, and the other is, quote, school of choice, unquote. I'm also going to, at the end of my talk, I'm going to offer you a challenge. After several months of research and discussion, I have discovered several interesting issues regarding paraprofessionals and Reynoldsburg City Schools. Let's first identify what a paraprofessional is and what the law allows one to do. A paraprofessional is a classroom aide or assistant. All they have to do to become one is to go to the Ohio Department of Education, get a background check, and a permit to become a paraprofessional. Some have no more than a high school diploma. Some have some college work. Some have a college degree, and some are retired teachers or other professionals. Among other things, the law has strict parameters in which they can work. Included in those parameters are working under the supervision of a licensed teacher and following the plans of the licensed teacher. They may not directly assess students, nor may they teach an entire class. They are only allowed to work with an individual student or small groups of students. Reynoldsburg City Schools had 29 paraprofessionals in 2012. Currently, with the additional hires tonight, you have over 80. Some of these paraprofessionals are planning, teaching, and assessing entire classrooms by themselves. Some are acting as substitute teachers as well as doing their other duties as a paraprofessional. In other words, they are taking the place of a licensed teacher, and in all intent and purposes, they are breaking the law. Does this save money? Yes. But at what cost to the kids? Sure, the paraprofessional is half the cost of a licensed teacher. But again, what are the consequences to the kids? What educational opportunities have the kids lost by not receiving the expert instruction from a fully trained professional? Just be aware that this situation is a lawsuit waiting to happen. The second issue I wish to discuss is also is so-called schools of choice. Again, let's identify a school of choice. It is a school which has specific programs or curricula which the student and or parent wants that student to experience. Usually the parent of that student must apply and be accepted to that school. Or a teacher may recommend the student to that school of choice. If the school resides outside the walking parameters of that school, that student may be bused to that school of choice. Reynoldsburg Schools basically follows this procedure. However, what about the student who wants to attend a school not of choice? Because, as an example, it is closer to the babysitter or the daycare and is outside walking parameters. In this case, Reynoldsburg City Schools does not bus these students. I've also been informed from several sources and just from observing the continuous improvement programs from all the schools here at the board meetings this past year that these schools of choice benefit significantly with more equipment, more supplies, and materials than the schools not of choice. The laws of the state of Ohio guarantee a free and equal public education. Are these two issues again also begging for a lawsuit? I've always believed in neighborhood schools and incorporating all levels of educational opportunities there, from regular education to gifted to special ed. The current practices in the schools of choice in Reynoldsburg smack of elitism, favoritism, and discrimination. Though it has been denied by the administration, Reynoldsburg City Schools is becoming a division of haves and have-nots. I challenge this board to review these practices I have outlined here tonight and make the necessary changes and allocations that are fair and equitable to all of the students of Reynoldsburg. The consequence for not meeting this challenge is to be faced with another spring like this past one, because more and more students and parents are going to want to go to the, quote, schools of choice, which will result in no room for many of them, and thus another dilemma of who goes and who does not. I also challenge this board to consider reducing the number of paraprofessionals and add licensed teachers to their places so all students can be instructed by experts rather than by novices. Remember, for every two paraprofessionals replaced by one teacher is cost neutral. Thank you for your time and consideration of these issues. Do you have any questions?
Not at this time, but I have your number.
Thank you.
Mr. Rodenmeyer, do you have any a handout or a document there, or that you can share, or perhaps email later? I've been writing as fast as I can here.
Yeah, but I can share this with you.
Okay, appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
I do believe we are on a podcast now, so we can go back to it later too.
Oh yeah.
All right, item 9.01, 2, 3, and 4 of up and under finance are up for action. Madam Treasurer, would you like to go through some of these for us, please?
Yes, on tonight are the May 31st monthly financial statements. There's also a number of appropriation modifications that we normally have every month. They're a little more in June as we do some year-end cleanup. Also tonight, we're accepting the donation from the Walter Terry Gann estate. He was the class of 1945. His estate donated $50,000 to the Reynoldsburg basketball program, outlined in the attachment or what the funds can be used for, but it's pretty wide open and pretty much at the discretion of the basketball coaches and the athletic director, so it's a very generous donation. And then also are a handful of transfers to the music funds and the athletic funds for the board share due to the reduction in the pay-to-participate fees. And something a little bit different that we're doing this year is we're going to advance money to the federal grants to allow the schools to start spending that in July rather than having to wait till September, October when we actually get our federal funds. Mm. And that's all that I have.
Thank you. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mrs. Dunlap. Second?
Second.
By Mr. Whitman. Any discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Items passed. Items 10.01, 02, 03, 04, and 05 are all up for action. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Whitman, seconded by Mr. Truex. Any discussion?
President Begney, members of the board, I just want to clarify that item 10.05 is a reduction in force for Everest Community School, not for our school district.
Thank you for that clarification. I know a few people have asked about that. Any other discussion?
In light of Mr. Rodenmeyer's remarks about paraprofessionals, of course, the hires tonight haven't done any of these, teaching classes alone or any other violations here. But, Madam Superintendent, do you have any comments about the paraprofessionals on the agenda?
Other than the fact that the paraprofessionals, I have to get to that section on the agenda, are paraprofessionals mainly that are supporting students that are replacing an existing paraprofessional and not a replacement of a teacher.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions? Madam Treasurer, would you call the roll?
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Moving on to 11.01, home instruction, 0.2, 11.02, translation interpreter, 11.03, out-of-district services, 11.04, primary care and nursing, and 11.05, the learning spectrum. Madam Superintendent, do you have any comments or any clarifications for any of these items?
President Begney, members of the board, these are just housekeeping items in preparation for the start of the new school year. We always put all of our staff members on the home instruction agenda so that we can go to them as we need throughout the school year and not have to come back to the board case by case. We have to serve some of our students out of district, and that's what 11.03 is, with services for students who attend school outside of our school district. We have a young man or a young person who requires the assistance of a nurse, and that's what 11.04 is. 11.05 is an agreement with the Learning Spectrum, which is an organization that supports high needs autistic children, and we have students who need those services too.
Thank you. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Whitman. Second by?
Second.
Mrs. Dunlap. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Items 12.01, 2, 3, and 4 are all up for action. Again, any clarifications, Madam Superintendent?
Sure. President Begney, members of the board, 12.02 is our agreement with one of the ESCs that allows us to hire and work with natives from different countries. So we have particularly Spanish, a couple of Spanish teachers that are going to be joining us or have joined us in the past and will be coming back for next year. Item 11.02 is, 12.02 is travel. And you heard that last month from Mrs. Harshaw, but I believe she's here tonight if you have further questions. And 12.03 is the VISTA program. I believe this is our third or fourth year using the VISTAs. It's a federal program that allows us to get extra assistance in our school buildings. We get some phenomenal folks that come in and do some specialized projects. We've had some folks do, we had a VISTA do a career center at the Livingston campus. We had a VISTA last year really work with the Summit staff and created a wonderful reading program at Summit. So we're excited about engaging in that partnership again this year. And the bell schedule. The bell schedule is not changing from last year's bell schedule. We're going to run the same bell schedule in the same bus tiers. So.
Thank you very much. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Truex. Second?
Second.
By Mr. Whitman. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, would you call the roll?
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. And now the thing that I think some of you may be waiting for. Item 13.01, our dress code revisions. Just a brief statement before we kind of get into some of the details. Mr. Truex and I sat down, was it about a week ago, to get information about our dress code. As I figured, there were not a lot of major changes, but there still are a couple of I's that need to be dotted and T's to be crossed. So without further delay, we'll go ahead and talk about those.
President Begney, members of the board, I'm going to call Dr. Cosgrave to the podium, please. I asked Dr. Cosgrave and our middle-level lead, Mr. Brooks, to engage the stakeholders, particularly teachers, students, administrators, and parents, in conversations to get feedback on the dress code. The engagement with teachers was not as formal as the engagement with parents. There was an actual meeting and a session to come. I've asked principals to talk with teachers throughout the school year, and I think natural opportunities occurred when issues arise. So they put together, this aggregated the feedback they received from all of those groups. We took a look at it last week in the policy committee meeting, which you were referencing earlier, and we have some recommendations and some things that you want to consider tonight that Dr. Cosgrave will go through based on the feedback. Dr. Cosgrave.
Good evening. Mrs. Thomas Manning just took you through the
the process that we used for this to get this information. I did provide you with three documents, so if you make sure you have three as you pass them down. So the first document I gave you is just the current student rate or wear dress code policy for your reference as we discuss these things. The second document that you have is a document that was drafted by myself and Mrs. Thomas Manning and Mr. Brooks to bring to the policy meeting. And then at the policy meeting, Mr. Truex and Mr. Begany also gave input for this. And so I made changes based on their feedback and recommendations to this document. Attached to it, I provided you some examples that we can take a look at in just a moment. And then I also provided you a blank copy of the feedback form that we use to gather information from administrators, parents, and students. If you look at the document, the blank document that I gave you that just says dress code feedback, just so that you know how this worked, students were put into groups because there were quite a few students who came to the meetings, and then parents filled this out individually. Administrators filled this out individually or gave feedback towards these topics. In the plus section, they were asked to put anything that they feel like should they like. It's positive in the dress code. They want to keep as is, as written. In the minus column was anything that they completely wanted to get rid of, completely removed from the dress code. On the other side, there's a triangle which represents delta, which means change. So anything that they felt like could stay in the dress code, but just might need some tweaking of the language or some clarification. And then the question mark column was any additional questions they had or things that they would wish for you to consider, or maybe things that they felt like weren't already mentioned in the other pieces of feedback. So as far as the actual dress code revisions document is concerned, the committee did meet and determined that some of the most common trends within the data kind of came to light, and the things they're recommended for next school year. So we had a lot of feedback about parents and students wanting dresses and skirts to be their own category, separate from tops or bottoms. I know there was a slight adjustment made maybe last school year to dresses and skirts. What was difficult was that when you have them in both tops and bottoms, that required that the dresses meet the criteria for both. So they had to be a solid color and also have a collar, which is very difficult. So we are suggesting here that we're removing the solid requirement so that a student could wear a pattern dress or skirt, however, leaving the length requirement as is, and also making it so that outerwear, anything in the outerwear category of the current dress code, could serve as a collar over top of the dress. And if you flip to, could we get the projected pictures up there, please? I put some pictures here to kind of better explain what we're looking at. So the things here for you to consider, you know, if there's a long skirt or a skirt that's at appropriate length that has a pattern, doesn't have to be a solid color, that would now be appropriate. And then also wearing some type of jacket or blazer or some type of covering over the dress would be acceptable. And that is what the committee discussed for that one. We did want to make sure that IDs are in the student's possession. That's still very important to us, but may not be required for them to be visible on a lanyard. We had a lot of discussion about that. We do want to make sure that the students have their ID on them so that if we need to ask them who they are, or we need them to identify themselves, or most of the time we use IDs if the student is early release or late arrival, we put a sticker on there so that they can quickly sign in and sign out to go to their college class. We would want them to have those in possession still. As far as the tops, the language was a little bit confusing in the original. Because it was asking that all requirements are met for the tops, and so we were wanting to change the language to they all shirts must have sleeves, but it should either have a collar or a mock neck, and then still keep the piece about no words, graphic designs, or logos. And I also gave you some examples in your packet. And then the other piece that is a recommendation would be adding visors as one of the pieces of headgear that would not be appropriate. We have a lot of students who try to wear a visor, and we feel as though it's similar to a hat. And I gave you a picture in case you're not an avid visor wearer to see what that looks like. right there, the pink one. Yep. So then we also have some things that you'll definitely want to consider that we had a lot of discussion about, but Mr. Begney and Mr. Truex really felt as though maybe this should be a continued discussion. And I did provide you some pictures for these things as well. Still up in the air is whether or not we would like for our students to wear collars. And you'll see that I provided you some shirt examples of things that we would consider collars versus a mock turtleneck. And also the next one is one that we deal with quite a bit. Do you want to allow a half zipper shirt like the blue one under mock necks and turtlenecks? Or the next one over, we have a lot of students who wear North Face jackets as their shirt or shirts similar to that. Do you want to include that as being dress code appropriate or not? I also gave you some examples of some quote-unquote collars that we see that may or may not be collars. So you'll definitely want to take that into consideration. Right now, the way that it's written, if students were to wear any of the shirts that I've pictured for you here, they would also have to have a collared shirt underneath because sweaters and jackets are considered outerwear, and it specifically says in the dress code that you have to have a collared shirt underneath something that is considered outerwear. And then, of course, mock turtlenecks or mock shirts are in here as well. And so I gave you a couple examples for you to think about. The other thing we had a lot of discussion about was scarves. A lot of students wrote on their feedback form and a lot of parents that they felt as though the scarves should be able to be worn around their neck instead of a collar. So I gave you some examples of the types of scarves that we're talking about on your last page. These are like decorative scarves. So currently the way the dress code reads, they would still have to have a shirt with a collar underneath, even if the scarf is over it. So that's something to consider. We also had a lot of discussion about spirit wear. So that's anything that is supporting some type of high school or any school for that matter activity. That could be a sport or band or theater or anything like that. But then also clubs such as our Human Trafficking Coalition students have t-shirts and things like that. So we had a lot of discussion about that because the way it's written right now, students can wear that on days designated by the principals. What everybody did kind of similarly say between parents, administrators, and students was that regardless of what we choose, it needs to be the same for all schools in grades 5 through 12. So it can't be one school has spirit wear on a certain day, but then the rest of them don't because our students do travel a lot between campuses and that becomes confusing. But there was a lot of discussion about should we allow it every Friday? Should we allow it every day? Should we only allow it when the principals all come together and decide? That is something that you'll want to consider. And then the big one is the bottoms and the leggings and the pants. So I gave you some examples here. I gave you a lot of different examples. One of the things that you'll want to consider is currently the way the dress code is reading, it discusses blue jeans, and you'll want to define what blue jeans are because students get very confused by that. Do we mean blue denim or do we mean blue pants or blue jeans? If you look on your picture, the pants that are bright blue in the middle, currently we were, you know, allowing those because we were interpreting it as we were not allowing denim blue jeans. However, the bright blue pants in the middle were okay. The yellow pants were okay. The red pants, the pink pants. So, because they have to be a solid color. So we had a lot of discussion about that definition. Are you meaning denim? Are you meaning actually blue? And then we also had a lot of discussion about leggings versus pants. We have this struggle every day. The dress code currently says no leggings or jeggings, and the list goes on. And so, you know, as a principal, it's very difficult to know, is that a legging or a pant? right now, we use the rule, does it have pockets? If it has pockets, then we're considering it a pant and not a legging. However, that's not written in the dress code. That's just the best way we could manage it at the time. So this is definitely something else that you'll want to consider. I do feel that the recommendations that we have, both at the top and then the things for consideration, when I kind of combined the data and I gave it to the committee, I do feel like we definitely captured most of the trends that we saw. Of course, there was a lot more feedback that was just individual things that certain individuals or groups wanted. And I have all of those original documents if you're interested. But I do feel like this kind of culminates most of the information that was common amongst all of the parties involved. So, do you have questions?
Oh, I'm sure we'll have plenty of questions. First off, thank you for doing all of this work, especially at the end of the year, because I know that's the least busy time for any administrator.
It's so not busy at all for a high school principal, Mr. Regany.
The thing that when we kind of sat down to talk about this is we want to make sure that, one, we don't become the dress police, but we also want to make sure that we don't that we try and keep some maintain some of this idea of professionalism amongst some of our students. Most people, believe it or not, actually feel very favorable towards the dress code. There were comments in the list about it needs to even be more strict, and there were a few that, you know, less strict, things like that. But it's trying to find the balance. What I envision is, you know, I don't imagine any teacher or administrator wants to spend the first X amount of minutes in the day visually inspecting every single person as they walk through the door to see if they are good to go or not good to go. That's kind of an unwise use of time. So hopefully with some of these revisions, and as we kind of finish and focus in on these last ones, we can kind of put something up that, while may not satisfy everybody, I think overall is definitely a good step in the right direction. So I will leave it up to any comments from board members. And again, jeans and blue jeans apparently are different after all. So,
Jocelyn, can I just ask you a little bit about how you gathered information from, you know, other teachers and administrators? I know that Madam Superintendent said it was not as formal. So how did you do that or gather it? Did you jot it down as people were?
I have all of the administrator feedback in the form of electronic documents. They were able to submit that. Some chose to submit feedback, some didn't. Not everybody participated. As far as the teachers were concerned, we did not do a formal process, only because we feel really, really confident that we know where most of our teachers stand on this, because it took up so much conversation during staff meetings as we were trying to figure out the best way to monitor it throughout the year. It kind of became really clear as administrators how our staff feels about the parts that are manageable and maybe confusing. I would say that in most of the buildings at the high school, at least, dress code was a topic of conversation in most of our staff meetings, just making sure that we're all sharing the same expectations and understanding where we stand on these things. It was a constant conversation. So as you read through the administrator's feedback, you would see a lot of them say, I know that my staff feels this way. It was definitely a lot of input from the administrators on behalf of their own academy. I did not get as much feedback, of course, from the middle school. You know, I kind of went to Mr. Brooks for that piece, just because apparently they don't have as big of an issue with it at the middle school, from what I'm hearing. You know, but we did collect their feedback, and we kind of summarized it all together. I will say that it was very, very similar to the same feedback we received from students and from parents. A lot of the same trends, so.
Dr. Cosgrave, again, thank you for your work in doing this. One question I had is that, you know, it seems to me that the big problem with, you know, any dress code is just that, you know, it gets enforced for a few days, it gets enforced when, you know, people are looking, and then in a week or so, you know, a few days, some teachers stop worrying about it, and eventually most people do, and then there's a crackdown, you know, and then it just kind of comes and goes in waves. Did the teachers ever have any comments about, you know, like the underlying causes of why it eventually just, you know, the enforcement decreases and then leading to this kind of trouble? Is it just?
I don't know if the teachers have specific feedback about that, but I can tell you that in most of our academies, we have the same teachers who monitor it consistently all the time. And then we have other teachers who just want to get right down to business and teach, and it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, so to speak. Although, you know, in the teachers' classrooms that actually monitor it to a T, I mean, they're doing it during attendance. And, I mean, a lot of times you really do have to make every student stand to look at the type of pants they're wearing, to make sure that, you know, their outfit is an appropriate length, to make sure they don't have logos somewhere. I mean, it is very time consuming. When I talk to my staff personally, They become very frustrated just how time-consuming it is, and so they just feel like more urgent about making sure that they're getting started with the lesson. To compensate for that, a lot of times you'll see our students who they know which teachers monitor it really closely, so they'll make sure they're in dress code when they go to those classes, and then they'll change their outfit later in the day, either fully change it or they'll adjust it. You will also, 9 times out of 10, if you have a student who comes to our office, you tell them, do you have clothes to change into? And 9 times out of 10, the answer is yes, because they know that they're out of dress code. And they brought other clothes in case someone said something to them. They are still missing class, but our goal is to get them back to class as soon as possible. If they can't make adjustments, then they are assigned ISS if they really can't fix their outfit. But, you know, I think it definitely isn't for a lack of effort on the administrator's part, because I know we spent at least 3.5 hours before school even started last year. We literally went line item by line item through the dress code and said, how are we interpreting this? What does this mean to us? What does this look like? And this still continued to happen. And I think, you know, when we have something that everyone can feel confident that they can monitor it quickly and consistently, it will make it a lot easier for everybody.
Thank you. Do we have some way of, you know, getting teachers' input on whether, like, you know, yes, I could, you know, it's a little bit of a hassle, but I could do this, and I could do it consistently, and so could the others, you know?
I mean, I suppose if you talk as a board and make some decisions about what you feel might be best, we could always ask the teachers if they feel like it's manageable for them. I will say it starts in the classroom. You know, we do dress code sweeps, and we have in the past gone classroom to classroom to collect all the kids out of dress code. You end up with a lot of kids, you know, and unless we're doing that every day, we're really counting on our teachers to tell us if a kid's out of dress code and send them to us so that we can help them adjust. And so I do think it's important that the teachers have a voice and have buy-in, because ultimately it starts with them. I can't intervene with a student getting them appropriately dressed if I don't know they're out of dress code in the first place. So it's definitely something we could do.
I think it's important for us to remember, one, I failed to mention that the policy you're considering tonight is for 5-12, not the elementary age kids. The elementary age kids have it down. We have no issues we need to discuss there. And as Dr. Cosgrave indicated, the middle level is not experiencing the same degree of issues as the high school faces. And we have to remind ourselves that the dress code is over 10 years old. And the last time we did revisions on the dress code, I was behind the podium reporting to the board. So that was, I'm thinking, 5 or 6 years ago. So I say that to say that just because we had some tension maybe in the spring does not mean that it's all broken. There are people who are enforcing the dress code. The kids have been reporting, by and large, every single day for 10, this is 10 years old. And so in 10 years, we've tweaked it to maybe this is the third time. And maybe every couple of years we go back to it and tweak it as trends change. But I think we need to make sure we acknowledge the success that we've experienced also in dress codes. And I like to ask you, invite you to drive by any suburban high school in Central Ohio. I believe we're the only public, traditional public school system that has a dress code policy. Drive by any of those others, high schools in particular, and then drive by our schools and do a comparison. And I think it'll be telling and very, very kind of in your face and right there for you to see that our kids, by and large, look good when they come to school. We do have some repeat offenders. We do have some kids that push it. But for the most part, we have safe schools with kids who are covered and kids who are ready to learn and can focus on learning.
I had some specific questions too. I think this is on Whitehall City Schools does have a dress code, and I think theirs is actually even a little bit more strict than ours. And I do agree that, you know, it's nice seeing kids walk to school and look very nice. and professional and ready to learn, but it's also, I know, a balance between, you know, an educator in a classroom spending too much time policing and wanting to educate. So I know it's a balance, and I struggle with making it too difficult and too detailed, so that there is so much wiggle room that teenagers are going to try it regardless. You know, we wouldn't have had hundreds in our ISS last year if kids weren't trying to push the envelope. So I hesitate to make it any more complicated. But with that in mind, I had jotted down a couple of questions, too, about scarves, for example, because I know that's a consideration, and I know Nick Kiesel is here as well, because, you know, we've had lots of discussions about hoodies and the security concerns with that. But are there any concerns with scarves? Because I can't think of any, but I'm not in the high school.
Actually, Mr. Truex and Mr. Begany had that discussion at the policy meeting, if either of you would like to talk about your concerns about that.
My concern is that a scarf can be used as a choking hazard. Somebody can come up behind the student and grab the scarf. It's already around their neck. Regardless of the way that it's wrapped, it can be somewhat dangerous. Granted, we also have our kids that carry or use lanyards, so that can be of the same respect, but it's just, in my opinion, I think it could be a security risk or a health hazard.
Mm-hmm. Then also, with the mock necks and the turtlenecks that you've kind of shown us, so the kids I know wearing the North Face jackets, so that zips all the way down. What would that be called then, if that were acceptable?
I'm not sure. I mean, I suppose it would go in the top section. Right now, it's considered outerwear, according to the current dress code. So we have a lot of students. I don't think that there's ever a question about the ones that fully zip up and down, as far as is that outerwear or not, because it's obviously a mm-hmm. jacket. Mm-hmm. So we would expect a collared shirt underneath. I think the ones in question are the ones that are half zipped, because when you do right. zip it, it becomes a collar, or right. if it's unzipped, you can fold it down. So mm-hmm. that's the part that you'd want to think about. And I would also encourage you to think about how far the zippers can go down and whether you are okay with the students being uncovered that far down if they don't have anything underneath.
Okay.
In the images that you've included, the blue one, is that a full zip or is that just a half zip?
The blue one has a full zipper down, so currently okay. that would be considered outerwear that would need a collared shirt underneath. And I also gave you that one to look at what we would consider a logo, mm-hmm. although it's considered outerwear, so currently that's okay on mm-hmm. outerwear, as long as it's small.
And the gray one there is a pullover with a half zip?
The gray one is a sweater that has a button collar and not a zipper. And if it's buttoned all the way up, it becomes what we would consider a mock collar. If it's folded down, it would be a regular collar. However, currently sweaters are listed as outerwear as well. So in your current dress code, this sweater would also have to have a collared shirt underneath.
I'm sorry, I was talking about the second one. It's charcoal gray or
oh, the
or maybe
one
black,
that's in the shade with the shaded part in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a Nike jacket that has a quarter zip down. And that's the one I was just talking about that, you know, right now we have a lot of conversation, is this outerwear or is it a shirt? We have a lot of students who wear these particular tops as shirts. So if we leave it as outerwear, it would need a collar underneath. If you leave it as a top, they would not need anything underneath. We would ask them to keep it zipped because that's what would make it a mock collar, or I suppose they could fold it down. But
so an easy solution would be, if it's a full zipper, then you need a collared shirt underneath. If it's the half zip, it's either got to be up or folded as a collar.
Right, and I would just, again, you know, really think about if you're willing to do that, how far some of the zippers can go down, like what, you know, and what might be showing. We get that a lot.
As we consider these changes here, I'm trying to, I think it would be useful for me to know the sort of the basic guidelines for some of these choices here. I mean, some of it is for safety concerns. Some of it is for security, I understand. Some of it is just so that to have a certain level of professionalism sort of looking. Maybe some is to deter cheating. I don't know. So, so are there some general guidelines there about, you know, what kind of constraints we want the dress choices to meet?
I mean, I think the spirit of the dress code originally, I was a teacher at Hannah Ashton when this was implemented, and we just really wanted to make our students dress professionally and, okay. and make sure that they're comfortable in their environment, make sure they feel safe, make sure, you know, it's that old, you know, saying that you dress for success. That's really what we expect of our students. And I don't want to downplay the fact that, you know, there are students, that come out of dress code and there are repeat offenders, but most of our students do the right thing and they look wonderful. I did not have that opportunity to hold kids accountable to this degree in my last building. And they do look so nice when they are in dress code. But I do think that some of it is safety, especially we had a lot of conversation about hoodies. In particular, it's very difficult when, I mean, Mr. Kiesel's an expert on camera work. However, it's very difficult when a kid, the minute they put their hood up, you're trying to look to see who they are based on how they walk, or do we recognize the hoodie? You know, there's a lot that goes into to it that is safety, for sure. The scarves, I thought, was a valid point. Mm-hmm. I think that it's all about our students looking presentable and feeling good about themselves when they come to school. I want them to feel like they are there for all the right reasons and they can be confident in what they're wearing. That's just my take on it. I don't know. I mean, Mrs. Thomas Manning said that she was here when this was, you know, originally discussed. So maybe there were some other considerations they kept in mind as to why they went to this in the first place.
I would echo your concerns, your statements. It was all around the idea of creating safe schools. And remember, when we implemented the dress code the very first year, we did not have secure entrances. The board at the time was adamant about the hoodie situation. We had a year or two where we had kids that did not belong to Reynoldsburg City Schools entering the high school campuses, creating disruptions, engaging in situations with other students, and there was no way for us to identify who those students were. I would venture to say the Board of Education didn't consider the issue of potentially using a scarf as a weapon at the time, but unfortunately 10 years later that is a potential reality. So I think it's important for you to go back to this every couple years and make sure that it represents our current stance and our current situation. But it was all in the name of keeping kids safe and creating conducive learning environments for kids and mitigating and distractions, so to speak.
That's all the comments I have. Thank you for your patience in answering these questions. And I do like the suggestion of making revisiting the dress code just sort of a regular routine thing instead of, you know, an irregular emergency kind of thing.
I have another question. Just, do you show the long dress, the long skirts? Those are right now not allowed?
It is not allowed, not because of the length, but because it is not a solid color. Because right now, skirts and dresses are supposed to meet the criteria for bottoms, and specifically skirts are supposed to meet the criteria for bottoms, which says specifically they have to have a solid color. So the long skirt that you see there would be out of dress code because it's not a solid color.
Not because of its length.
That's correct.
Thanks.
I think a number of the issues that we have here, I think most everyone seems to be in agreement for the most part. The question then just comes down to really the collar situation as far as collars in general with our shirts. And then the last one, again, is the idea of blue jeans versus denim pants and things of that nature. To alleviate confusion, it's a lot of people we've talked about the idea, is it going to be one or the other? Is it going to be, are we going to allow all, or are we not going to allow any? And that's kind of where I want the rest of the board's input and the superintendent's input on something like this. I think no one's really said
to put blue jeans in, but then the question becomes, for clarity's sake, about the ideas of denim, and to make it easier for administrators and teachers to kind of enforce the policy, is then what's that do? What's that leave us with the other, if you want to put the picture of the colored pants up, and what, where to go in that direction in terms of the color of pants as opposed to, as well as the fabric, I guess.
President Begney, members of the board, my comments to the administrators during that policy meeting was, in my opinion, if you eliminate the requirement for a collar, we don't have a dress code. Mm-hmm. And that's fine if that's what the direction we want to go, but I think that's what it's going to be, because all you have to do is have on solid pants, solid bottom right now, and any kind of top. Including an outerwear top where a student could have absolutely nothing underneath that, whatever mock or whatever it is, and Lord forbid we have that, but that is a possibility if we eliminate the collared shirts. As far as the blue jeans, I really want to think I'm not so old that I wouldn't be able to pick out a pair of blue jeans if I saw them. I think I could. Those pants up there, no, those aren't blue jeans. That's a cobalt blue pair of slacks, not even slacks. They're pants, leggings, jeggings, whatever you want to call them. They're not blue jeans that I wore many, many years ago, and blue jeans that I wear today. But so I would not classify those pants as blue jeans. They're blue pants.
And that's how we treated them. I mean, the ones on the bottom that you see would have been acceptable on the bottom row, and the ones on the top were the ones that we said no for various reasons. I mean, some have holes, obviously, and so.
I'm still not, and Mr. Begany, are we going to go through some of these others as well? Because I'm still not convinced with scarves, I would just, Mr. Kiesel, I would love to get your input just with safety and security as to any experiences that you may have had with scarves and possibly being used as a choking hazard weapon, whatever you want to call it.
Good evening, members of the board. Personally, I haven't had any in my experiences as far as scarves are concerned. I mean, really, a tie. It could be used for the same thing if someone grabs from behind. So I guess if you're not going to allow scarves, you could also look at ties as well. But there's, I mean, really, I don't know. As far as safety and security, I don't see it as being a concern. Mm-hmm. It could be used. Someone could take a belt off and use a belt as well. If they were adamant in harming another person.
And I understand, Mr. Truex, you're saying that the scarf is kind of readily there.
Sure.
You know, and it's open. It's just it looks very nice. A lot of girls like to wear that, sure. And it looks nice. And so I would love to give that option. And maybe with the idea that we're coming back and tweaking this every couple of years, this would be something then that you would be looking towards and paying attention to. But you obviously wouldn't have any personal experience here if we're not allowing scarves now, right? So that may not have been a case here. But so just in the larger picture, I was curious to see if that was a concern.
In years of working, law enforcement, I can't remember of a call or incident of someone being choked, being as they were wearing a scarf or a tie or, whatever the case would be. So I don't know if historically speaking, we could take that into consideration. Uh-huh. I agree that current styling and trends, we're seeing a lot of young ladies wearing those now. But I think, again, if we're talking improvised weapons of opportunity, I mean, it does present an opportunity, absolutely, as does a tie. I mean, as does a suit jacket, as far as using that as a choking device as well. So
that's going a little too far there, Kiesel. I don't even want to think about it. I feel like I'm at a movie now. It's getting a little bit crazy.
Anything worn around their neck could be used. I mean, technically.
I like to go back during the inception of the dress code. The scarves were thrown in strictly due to the fact at the time there was an issue with the bandana scarves the kids were using to demonstrate their affiliation to one group or another. It was not with the intention of prohibiting ladies from wearing silk scarves. So adding scarves to the dress code just totally eliminated the opportunity for kids to, if we have scarves in the dress code, then I can put my scarf in my pocket.
Absolutely.
And demonstrate that I'm with yellow scarf, that means I'm with the Dandelion Club or whatever it is. And that really is the thinking behind the scarves initially.
Obviously, there's a strong gang affiliation.
That's right.
Right. Obviously, so.
Okay, there's so many things. So if we don't have the scarves, then the point is moot. But if we do have the scarves, then the question comes back to, do the scarves count as a collar? Or do they have to wear a collared shirt underneath? And I'm just trying to make sure we keep on track so we're not here till the end of time trying to debate the ideas of blue jeans and scarves. Not that it isn't important, but again, we have to kind of figure out where we want to go with that one.
Can we talk about the spirit wear?
Can we finish the scarves first?
Okay.
Yeah, let's... scarves first, then we'll move on other things.
I didn't know we finished collars or half zips either.
We haven't finished anything yet, so we're working on it. So let's start with the scarves. Are there any other comments of anybody? I know, Mr. Truex, you put your point of view in as far as the scarves. Is there anybody who is opposed to the idea of scarves in general? Okay. Is there anyone that is, do we need to have a collared shirt underneath the scarves themselves, or will the scarves substitute as a collared shirt?
I think the scarves would substitute as a collared shirt. I think we're just complicating.
As long as they're on and as in the pictures up there, Mr. Wright.
And if we apply, and if you say yes for a scarf, you could always put in, you know, the accessory area, because I know we have a whole accessory area that there are no bandanas. And I think there's a distinct difference between a bandana and a scarf.
Okay. Mr. Whitman?
Yes, scarves as collars sounds reasonable to me.
Scarves with or without collars?
As collars.
Okay. You know.
Any other commentary? Anyone? No? All right, so we have crossed off scarves. Now let's move to the next. You can go ahead and sit down. I hope these jeans don't become weaponized in tonight's discussion.
Exactly.
Jackets.
Let us move to the, you can, unless you, if you just want to sit while we hash things out, that's fine too. Ms. Dunlap, you said you wanted to go to spirit wear.
Well, I thought we were just kind of discussing things down the list before we're making an addition or any decision. So,
but let's just move on down the line. So sure. Let's go with spirit wear. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just, again, Dr. Cosgrave, you know, just a little bit of input. And I know I read through and there were a lot of comments in the plus, minus, and, you know, delta. But you said the common theme with that was really that it should be across the board. But that would be kind of difficult to coordinate. So wouldn't every Friday or something like that be easier?
I don't really have a preference on this one way or another, to be honest. I can tell you that a quick email to all the 5 through 12 administrators would be simple.
So it would be easy.
Yeah. I know Mr. Brooks, a lot of times when he's having a spirit day, he tweets it out to students. So, I mean, we communicate about this pretty frequently. So I don't think the communication will be an issue at all. And I think Mr. Brooks and I, as we were doing these meetings, we both said, let's make sure that we're doing this 5-12 wide if we're having a day. So.
Well, because Raider wear is very different. And having kids in... you know, middle school and having kids at high school, it's very different. Because if you have a child in the middle school, I'm helping to coordinate, you know, and that child is not always clear. What am I allowed to wear, you know, to this day at the end of the year and what have you? Because I want to participate in everything. Where a high schooler, they get a tweet, oh, I know what it is, and they take care of it themselves. So, you know, across the board, for parents, I don't think it's different, you know, how a middle schooler, a parent may become involved, where at the high schooler, they're going to say, great, I can wear my, you know, track jacket.
So as long as the, because it says as currently written, so as long as the ideas are written here, but then the designation of when those days would occur would be somewhat different, and then it would be up to the individual administrators to maybe a point of emphasis when we have a spirit day, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do, something on one of those weekly emails or something. Because usually I know for Wagner Road, that's usually I would get something like that for my own son. I would say the next day is a Raider wear day, and then it would have a list of things we can wear. So that would be something that would alleviate at the middle school level. And the high school kids usually have a decent understanding, but I think the coordination.
And we always put it on announcements.
Yeah.
And then we put it in our weekly updates to parents if we're having one usually, but.
Any other comments about Raider/Spiritwear?
So where do the idea of any day is appropriate? I mean.
That was previously, as we discussed at the outcomes meeting, it was, I doubt it was just like this, but it was like, hey, Friday's going to be a spirit wear day. Why? Because we said so.
Oh, okay. I was interpreting that as, well, you could follow dress code or you can wear Raider wear. Any day.
And I think that depended upon the academies in which the students were, but as you had mentioned earlier, when one student goes from one academy to the next, there was that issue of ambiguity between the two. But if we're all, quote unquote, on the same page with everything, that would eliminate that issue. One question I did have as far as Raider wear when it comes to, I know that a lot of the groups, whether they're the robotics team or the band, some of their Raider wear, spirit wear, does actually have hoodies themselves. I know that they've tried to talk a couple of different groups of just wearing regular sweatshirts and some other things. Is that an issue? How would you like to see that particular thing for a spirit day? I would hate to have students spend $30, $50 on a hoodie that has something Reynoldsburg, you know, created and then not be able to wear it in school if that's, you know, still the issue. I didn't know what anyone, and that's not just to you, Dr. Cosgrave, that's just to everybody in general.
Because
I would hate to kill a fundraiser because I know that those are big money makers for some of the programs out there.
I just personally do stick by the hoodie thing regardless of whether it's a Reynoldsburg one or not, to be real honest, only because I can't tell you how many times we've watched film of, like, if someone breaks into the school or they're outside in the parking lot doing something they shouldn't be, or we're trying to figure out who took something from someone's locker, whether it's a Reynoldsburg hoodie or a blue hoodie, I still can't see them. So, and I get what you're saying. I 100% agree that it's unfortunate that, you know, we've had fundraisers in the past where we have sold hoodies and the kids can't wear them. We try to encourage them to just go ahead and wear them to football Friday night. And I do know that some of the organizations have just discussed, you know, now that we know for a fact there's no hoodies, because it specifically says it in that section, they're just going to make sure they're selling regular sweatshirts. So that is one that I will say, if we do have a hard time identifying someone on camera, it's almost always because they have a hood up or a hat on. That's just my two cents, I would say. Mr. Kiesel would agree with that.
I just wanted to make sure that we're all on the same page about the reasons why we do some of the things that we do. Because as a teacher myself, I've been in some of those rooms, and I understand the difficulty it is with once the hood goes up. So,
and you know, my son has a baseball hoodie. You know, Reynoldsburg. Well, sorry, you can't wear it because I understand the security. And I had a conversation with somebody recently, and they said, well, I have no place to wear it. And that was my same answer. Well, you can show your spirit a lot of other places besides in school. In fact, we'd love to see you show it outside of school to everybody else. I didn't know if Ohio Select, and actually I had wanted to call there, but I didn't get a chance. I was curious if we do encourage him to make a sweatshirt without a hood or a mock, since these are becoming very, you know, with a quarter zipper, you know, something that they might be able to wear to school. If we could encourage him to, I mean, that would, he provides so much of what our kids buy, it would behoove us, I think, to work with him to, you know, supply that then. So the kids do have an alternative to wear to school.
Sounds good. Any other questions about spirit wear discussion? Raider wear? All right, we'll just go down to the next list. The half zip or button shirts or sweaters are acceptable with no collar underneath as long as the shirt has a mock neck or collar. I know we've come up with a couple of discussion points on this one. Are there any opposing views to allowing the, if you want to put the pictures up again with the mock necks? I think we would have to get specific about the length of the zipper and what goes underneath the three-quarter or the quarter zipper versus the outerwear of a full thing, of the full zipper. Feel free to jump in anytime. Anybody?
I'm just so hesitant to put a length on the zipper because it's just one more thing to police. But if that acted as a collar, but we require a shirt regardless under it, to me that would take care of it. So if it were, you know, this length, or this length, there would always be a shirt, but I see no reason why that can't be considered a collar. I think it looks very nice.
I think that the clearly, just as the jeans, it's obvious that the two on my left or on the left are outerwear, and the other two are, you were talking about sweaters, any sweater. You have, I mean, that kind of common sense says it's a sweater, it, you know, whereas the two, when I look at that, it's immediately outerwear, two on the left, outerwear, two on the right are not.
I agree. When we were talking about it, that just, not so much the blue with the emblems on it, but the one that kind of the, in the shaded area, that tends to be one. Is that the one that you see a lot of girls wearing?
We see a lot of girls and guys wearing that one. Okay. And we also had a lot of young men who wore the really nice sweater that's on the right without a collar underneath. But because sweaters are specifically listed under top outer layers in letter A, you know, you'll see there in the top outer layers, there's sweaters, and then there are vests and cardigans. Right now, those are all considered outerwear and therefore would have to have a collar underneath. So I would say those two were the most common that we would see.
So we could move the sweaters to from outerwear to innerwear, as long as they, and then that would make them have to fulfill the requirement of having a collar.
Yeah, if you made that sweater on the very right under tops instead of outerwear, I would assume that they would be able to wear that depending on what you decide with the mock necks and whatnot, because it does make it a collar.
They okay. would make that as a collar, and then we could just specifically say it still has to have an undergarment.
Yeah.
And now I understand, because I saw something where undergarments must be worn, and I thought, well, that's a given, but, you know, no.
We're not making teachers inspect that. Just want to let everybody know right now.
But if you're wearing, if we're saying, okay, so this can be a collar, I understand why you say there has to be some type of shirt underneath.
Any other comments on the collars? The mock turtlenecks? Okay. We'll go to the easier one. The leggings versus pants debate. There was very little consensus or very little disagreement on the idea of allowing leggings in our schools. Those are currently not allowed, so I don't think that that's going to need to change. I think the only question became, how do you differentiate between some that look like pants versus the ones that look like leggings? And you're kind of going with must have a pocket.
That was our intent.
Yeah, I know. Some leggings have pockets. I'm not a fan. I don't wear them myself, so I'm just not sure.
You know, that was our attempt. This is definitely one that we see the most. I don't have advice on this to you. You know, because there are pants that have pockets that are skin tight. And then there are leggings that they're actually called joggers. I don't know if you consider them leggings, but so joggers have pockets.
Then we have the jeggings category.
And then you have jeggings. And then like joggers are more to me like athletic wear, which is not okay. But because they have pockets, we had to let them wear them. And then you have leggings that are really tight and have no pockets. So those ones we definitely knew weren't okay.
Everybody got that? Did everybody write that? All right, so leggings bad. Jogging, athletic apparel with pockets, is that something that you've generally been accepting? Or is it because it's
It depended on the material. Like if it was a sweatpants material, then it was kind of obvious that it was athletic wear.
Okay.
We had a lot of students who wore joggers that were just like a black pant. You could tell they were more casual, but we let them because they were a solid color. They weren't athletic wear material necessarily according to like sweats or wind pants, and they had pockets. So.
And see, I struggle with the whole jeggings / jeans debate because I have a hard time telling which is which. You have a very skinny pair of jeans, black jeans. They're going to look the same thing as a pair of jeggings.
Right, and I gave you a couple examples of that up there, like a regular pair of jeans versus like skinny jeans versus.
Are there any jeggings up there?
And it depends on who you ask.
Right, that's.
So for consensus sake. Superintendent Thomas Manning, so we can kind of move along. I mean, I know that there's a differentiation of all the different types of pants. I would assume that pretty much, would you say keeping the pants as is with maybe the amendment of that there has to be a pocket of some sort to at least separate some of these issues out?
I President Begney, members of the board, I would keep the pants as is, and we're going to have to really trust that our administrators and teachers are the fashion experts that they are, and they'll be able to identify that. I just feel like the more we talk and try to tweak this, it's becoming as clear as mud to me.
Yeah.
And your whole goal was to try to make it a little more clear, and we're getting kind of bogged down in details that are going to confuse kids and teachers and all of us. So I think the more you can keep what we have, preserve what we have, and you know, if you're looking to give kids a little bit of freedom, I think you've done that. You've talked about some things that'll do that, and you can do that while preserving the spirit of the dress code. I think you've done that.
Any, sounds good with that, everyone?
I would just say that, yeah, a common request I saw a lot of is, you know, why can't we wear jeans? And it sounds like the reason for that is they're what you wear casually. We want you to look a little bit nicer dressed, and I'm okay with that. And then I would just say then, and I think it's what you're saying here, say no denim jeans at all. And that way parents don't have to look at a very faded pair of black jeans and decide, you know, are they blue or are they black? Just they're denim, so we can't wear them to school. Is that correct? No. Okay.
There are colored denim jeans. Like those pants that are up there, some of those are probably made of denim, even though they're a solid color.
All right, so your typical Levi's / Wrangler blue jeans would not be acceptable because that's currently where we're at, and that would be no change to that. However, like the pictures that we have here in the monitor would be the red, the cobalt blue, the canary yellow, and whatever the other one is. Those colors would be acceptable because they're not, they may be denim, but they're a dressier version. Is that?
I feel really confident that we were able to clearly tell, is it blue, yellow, red, or like the blue jeans that you were referring to. I feel really confident about that. What I am saying is you are going to want to somehow, you know, I know what the board meant when they were saying blue jeans. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of parents and students who, when they're being called to the office because they have on the top set of things and not the bright cobalt blue, they're like, but it said blue jeans. To them, the top is blue jeans. To me, if the cobalt blue pants were denim, I would still consider those okay because they're blue pants. Mm-hmm. So I just think there needs to be some clarification of language. As far as monitoring it, that was not a problem.
All right, so okay. No blue denim jeans would be, and then put like in parentheses, Levi's, Wrangler, or something along those lines. And then that would hopefully eliminate some of the confusion. And then the rest of the pants policy as is.
Again, President Begney, I remember the former board when I got the feedback from the stakeholders last time we did this. A concession they made was students could wear any color denim except blue. That was one of the concessions the board made at the time. So now I feel like with every iteration of the dress code, we're getting farther and farther away from what the original intent was.
Right, well, I misspoke because I was meaning to keep it as is
right
now.
Right, that's
right. Just maybe make it more clear as to what blue jeans are. I understand. I can see the confusion because it took everyone up here basically, okay, blue jeans versus denim versus Wrangler versus cobalt blue versus, and that's where I think it's the language part of it that became confusing as opposed to the actual intent of everything. All right, so as is.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. For years I've heard about complaints saying, even though it was, we can understand the rationale for saying every color jeans but blue, you know, in the context of the last discussions, to someone who wasn't privy to that, who's just in the high school now, they think any color jeans except blue, that's just crazy, you know. And then that opens the way for arguments between, you know, are these black or are they navy blue? I mean, I've personally heard, you know, a parent talk about a situation they got into over just that situation. So I would say if we don't want to have blue jeans as an issue of looking professional, then I would say just make it any kind of, you know, any jeans, anything made out of denim. And that, I think, is what's going to make things clearer. If we stick with the way it is, that was one of the big complaints about confusion that I was hearing.
Any other comments on just the idea of, for lack of a better term, eliminating any color of denim, regardless of, for clarity's sake? And then it becomes more of an issue of fabric than color.
Well, then we're going to...
If we say that we're going to eliminate denim, then we're going to put teachers and administrators in the position where they're going to have to touch or feel the fabric to be able to determine whether it's denim. I'm saying, how do you make that determination, you know, whether it's denim made by Levi's or Wranglers or Lee or whomever versus...
Are we overthinking that aspect of things? Is that going to be something that you think is going to be so dramatic of an issue?
I feel really confident in the way we've been monitoring that. I don't get a lot of questions about it. I mean, it happened every once in a while, but not... I mean, to me, if it could be a color in a Crayola box, you're good. And if it can't, because there's not really a denim crayon that's blue, then you're probably not. You know, it really wasn't, you know, we had a couple people who just wanted some clarification, but after an explanation, it was fine.
Because I guess my concern is if we eliminate the colored denim and things of that nature going beyond what this dress code has right now, then all of a sudden the parents in the community are going to be like, okay, so what does that leave us left with? That leaves us with, you know, docker pants and formalizing, which means that it seems like it's more of a step up in terms of the dress code kind of moving away from where we're at right now. And that would just be my concern, because I can guarantee you that's probably one of the first things that I get a phone call about once this meeting is over with, just about the idea if we're changing it and making it more stringent as opposed to at least maintaining what it is.
Well, didn't you really want just us to better identify that top row? A clarification that top row is not allowed. We just don't know what to call.
I know. I know some of the students that have come in here before, and I want to make sure that, you know, that we're not just automatically going through, that we at least have the discussion, because I know that that was one of their big concerns. But again, I think for clarity's sake, I think keeping things kind of as is probably the best way to go. So then the next step for this would be redo as far as, you know, put it into a new policy, and then people would be able to view it for between now and the next board meeting. People are able to comment at that point in time, and then it would be for a vote the next board meeting in July.
Oh, we can make the tweaks in the policy as you have indicated tonight and upload it to the website for feedback, and then again next month revisit it with the idea, hopefully, that you'll be able to land on a decision so we can make... get the communication out to.
Well, at least what this does is this gives some clarification, especially for parents who are looking for some of those early bird school sales and things like that for clothes, so they have an idea of what is and is not acceptable long before, you know, the sales racks are clean. So I think that's a good way to go.
Can I have some clarification then? So did we decide that scarves are okay instead of collars? Was that a consensus?
Next month will be.
Yeah, as far as.
I mean, when it is revised and Superintendent Manning comes back with us with a revised policy, would that be included or no?
I think I heard the board say scarves were going to be allowed, and I think I heard you say scarves would take the
place of a collar.
Yes.
Right. You had jumped onto spirit wear by the time we got to that part.
And half zips don't have to have a collar, but need to have some type of outer or some shirt underneath, correct?
I think that's what I heard you say.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Send your emails accordingly. We'll review all of them and go through it as we discuss moving forward. This is just action, so we'll go ahead and move on to item 14.01, exterior masonry damp-proofing project. Okay, Miss, you just go ahead and start with that.
This topic's not as exciting as the last topic, so I'll keep it short. Basically, we have three buildings in the district that have a split-faced exterior block. We do have some water infiltration issues at Wagner Road Middle School. What this would be is basically to contract with Weatherproofing Technologies to power wash and basically seal coat that building. And so this would be an attempt to do that. Item 14.02 is surplus items. Basically, we have a broken audio meter and some damaged library books.
I know we talked earlier about kind of want to give an update as far as some of the janitorial issues, as far as how we're getting our buildings clean and ready for school and all of that.
Absolutely. So as you know, we basically terminated the agreement with CELA Facility Solutions at the end of the school year. We are in the process of issuing a custodial RFP. In the interim, we are using substitute custodians to help clean the buildings. We are doing some team cleaning. We are short-staffed, but we're doing our best to get around to all the buildings and doing our best to address the needs.
Thank you. Any motions for 14.01 and 14.02?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Truex, second by Mr. Mr. Whitman. Any further discussion?
Mr. Starr, I know that the masonry repair was one of the things we discussed in the last Buildings and Grounds Committee meeting, and I know for we had quite a lot of items on there, and some of them you had price estimates, and others you said we just don't know yet. So, could you this estimate of $38,000 is that about what you estimated last time, or did it turn out being a little more or less? You
know? When we originally reviewed the list of buildings and grounds, we put a place for about $50,000 in for each building. So this is actually coming in about 14 less than what we originally projected.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, no further discussion. Madam Treasurer, would you call the roll?
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion passed. Item 15.1, executive session, item A7. Do I have a motion? Moved by Mr. Truex.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Whitman. Any discussion? If not, Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion passed. We will go into executive session, and upon return, there may be action.